President Trump's most important job is going to be the trickiest. It's the area where the president can make the biggest progress, but it's also where he can be misled into catastrophic errors. I'm referring to his nomination of literally hundreds of federal judges, including nominations to the U.S. Supreme Court. The good news is that you can help AFA Action's constitutional experts research nominees and give advice to the president. But to do this analysis, AFA Action needs your help. So please visit afaaction.net to donate today.
Welcome to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve, Senior Pastor of First Baptist Church in Texarkana, Texas. Now, here's Pastor Jeff.
Well, good Thursday morning and welcome to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. I want to talk today about deceivers. The Bible says in 2 Timothy chapter 3, beginning in verse 10, "But you followed my teaching, conduct, purpose, faith, patience, love, perseverance, persecutions, and sufferings, just as happened to me at Antioch, at Iconium, and at Lystra, what persecutions I endured, and out of them all the Lord delivered me. And indeed, all who desire to live godly in Christ Jesus will be persecuted." And then here's our key verse, "But evil men and imposters will proceed from bad to worse, deceiving and being deceived." Deceiving and being deceived. We have lots of people in our churches today who are deceiving and being deceived. The Bible calls those men evil men and imposters. Now, we have breaking news in the Southern Baptist Convention. What caused me to want to talk about this today is what is going on in the Southern Baptist Convention. And if you have kept up at all, you know, we were told as Southern Baptists, we were told at a convention several years ago that there was a crisis in the Southern Baptist Convention, and it had to do with sexual abuse, the sexual abuse crisis, and there was massive cover-up, and what you saw in the Catholic Church among the priests and all the cover-up, what you saw in the Boy Scouts with all the cover-up, we had that same issue in the Southern Baptist Convention. Well, the convention was rocked by that, and I think it was Russell Moore, who at that time was the president of the Ethics and Religious Liberties Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention. He made reference to the fact that there was massive cover-up, and so that caused a big stir, and people wanted to get to the bottom of it, and we have to protect women who have been abused, and everybody agrees with that. This is horrific, if true, and so we hired Guidepost Solutions to investigate, and they did a big investigation, and everything came up goose eggs. There wasn't any cover-up in the Southern Baptist Convention. And the Baptist Press just released yesterday that the Department of Justice closes investigation on the SBC. It said yesterday that the Southern Baptist Convention and the Executive Committee investigation has officially concluded. There was no crisis of abuse. The only thing that they found and the only charge that was made was by Dr. Matt Queen. He was charged with making a false statement to investigators, and he was sentenced for that. I think he has 1 year of supervised, I don't know, it was something fairly minor. It wasn't a major thing that he did. He got scared and said something he shouldn't have said. And anyway, he was fined $2,000 and put on parole for a year or something to that effect. Well, Denny Burke, who is a seminary professor at Southern Seminary and Boyce College, he posted this yesterday. "So here's the bottom line on the SBC abuse crisis," and he puts crisis in quotations. There wasn't one. A federal investigation closed after making one arrest, not for abuse, but for making false statements under oath. An independent investigation by Guidepost Solutions found no systemic problem with abuse at the SBC Executive Committee. We have spent about $14 million in legal fees as a result of investigations that uncovered no systemic problems with abuse. The problem here is not with the good intentions of Southern Baptist messengers who were doing their level best to address a problem that was presented to him. To them, the problem is with the misinformation they were given about a crisis that in the end, no one can find any evidence for. So to talk about this important subject and the millions and millions of dollars that the Southern Baptist Convention has spent going after something that didn't even exist is my good friend, Dr. Scott Coulter. Dr. Coulter is the president and founder of the Danbury Institute. And Scott, welcome to the program.
Hey, Pastor. Good morning. Glad to be with you today.
Well, I appreciate you, my friend. We got to visit at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention and talk about some of these
things, but this
recent report just reaffirms what we most of us already knew. There was not a crisis in the Southern Baptist Convention, and it shouldn't have taken $14 million to figure that out.
Well, that's absolutely correct. And, you know, anytime there's a case of abuse, and specifically sexual abuse, that is a tragedy. As Christians and as ministers, we must take those times seriously. We must take every instance seriously and every allegation seriously. None of us are advocating that that's not the case. But there has been this narrative presented about Southern Baptists now for several years that there was widespread systemic abuse that was being covered up in our entities and our agencies and our seminaries. And this report came out and made very clear that just is not the case in any instance, in any fashion. They found one instance of someone who has been charged, but that was not for abuse charges. That was for speaking something that was untrue under oath and perhaps manufacturing some notes there that were false. It was not about an abuse case. And so the Department of Justice has confirmed what many of us have been saying for years now, that Southern Baptists actually do a pretty good job of taking care of people in our churches. No one's perfect, but there's not this widespread narrative of abuse that has been perpetrated on the people here in this way.
Okay, so Scott, because you know a lot about this and you headed up the Conservative Baptist Network for, you kind of founded that, started that and headed it up, and got pastors to get involved and recognize that, hey, things are starting to go left, and they're going faster and faster, and we're jumping on the bandwagon of all the things in culture with the Me Too movement and BLM and all that stuff. Who were the big players in saying and convincing the convention that we had a crisis?
Well, there were several at play here, and some did more than others, of course. The Conservative Baptist Network, as you mentioned, was one of the early groups that recognized that our denomination, which is the largest Protestant denomination in America and really in the world, was headed left. And we saw that through some topics such as critical race theory and Resolution 9 that was presented, and some concern about what was happening in our seminaries and some things that were being taught. And then also this narrative that traditional Baptists and conservatives were really covering up and harboring abusers, and that needed to be rooted out. And we realized that earlier than some did that this was really a political tactic. This wasn't a spiritual tactic, but this was a political way to move the direction of the denomination further left. You can't overlook the role of men like Russell Moore in this, who headed up for years our Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission. Really, we joke and we quip, but it's sad that the commission was not ethical, and it doesn't do much to defend religious liberty. But under Russell Moore's tutelage, this was a group perpetuated this narrative of abuse within the SBC, even with letters that he leaked that seemed to leak that the executive committee was hiding abusers and was systemically abusing people and allowing that to happen under their watch. That led to this guidepost report that led to us spending millions of dollars and hiring an outside agency to look into this. The report really confirmed that they did not find widespread instances of abuse or even notable instances that were across the board. And then that led ultimately to this investigation from the Department of Justice. A guidepost operates in New York, and so the Southern District of New York picked up this case And the Biden-appointed Department of Justice took on the entire Southern Baptist Convention, which is really a big deal to think about a government agency investigating an entire denomination, and has been doing so for years now, year after year after year. And just yesterday notified that these Biden appointees had confirmed that there was not widespread systemic abuse and no charges were filed denominationally or organizationally after years of looking into this.
Well, so Russell Moore, he seemed to be the biggest proponent of this idea that we had a crisis in the convention. And so when you think about 2 Timothy 3:13, but evil men and imposters will proceed from bad to worse, deceiving and being deceived, I think we could say that the messengers were being deceived. And they were, you know, I've heard some, Scott, say, well, you know, we didn't do anything that the convention didn't vote on. They told us to do this, so we were doing this. But they were making those decisions based on information they got that was incorrect. And so somebody's being deceived, but somebody is the deceiver, and they're making statements that they've created out of thin air. What is the recourse for the SBC regarding people that made these false statements, knowing they were false?
Well, the messengers are a collective body of pastors and church representatives that come together once a year. And these are well-intentioned folks. These are Southern Baptists, everyday Southern Baptists on behalf of their churches trying to do what's right, people who love the Lord. And so, of course, when you stand in front of a group of people like that and say, we have evidence of massive cover-up of sexual abuse, victims are here today to speak to us, and this narrative is foisted upon the people, really, that we are hiding abuse and that there's a den of sexual abusers among us, of course they would act decisively and swiftly and say, you know, we need to do absolutely what's necessary to get this rooted out of among us. And so I don't fault the messengers who voted in a couple of different meetings to take this very seriously. That's the right course of action. I fault the people who presented this from the platform as being the case. And now, after all of this expense, we've found that the evidence for it was lacking and was really never there. Russell Moore, certainly a bunch of others got on board with this, but he's been quoted in his own publication now, where he leads Christianity Today, saying, I don't believe this could be described as anything other than a criminal conspiracy. He was saying within our SBC that this was criminal activity and that it was a conspiracy of cover-up, and of course, neither of those things are true.
So does the SBC have any recourse against him for making those false statements? Because he would know they were false, right?
Yeah. I don't know what it would be. Certainly there would be legal recourse, I believe, and we need to look into that probably. But he has left his post at the executive committee. He's no longer a Southern Baptist Convention employee. He resigned from that, which seems to indicate recognizing some of his future likely was troubled there, and has moved over to Christianity Today and is the editor there of publications and resources at CT. And really, that seems to be a much better fit for him. He's attending a church that is not a primarily Southern Baptist church in Nashville and is in a much more progressive leftist publication there. That publication has come so far from what Billy Graham intended when it first began, and he seems to be in a place where his views and his beliefs and his narrative fits well. So he's moved into a place that is more appropriate for where he is and is no longer really part of the SBC, but did immense damage before he left.
Well, Scott, you know, there are people that say things that they think are right, but they're wrong. And then there are other people that say things that they know are wrong, but they
right.
make these assertions. His seems to be more in that latter category. He knew that this wasn't true, but he was making these assertions. It's hard to attach motive, but it's hard to think that he was just deceived into thinking that was the case, that there was this massive cover-up, when he would know there wasn't.
Well, we've spent years looking for any evidence that he had or that he knew of to the tune of you know, more than $10 million here in legal fees, and haven't been able to find it. And people that are not Southern Baptist and don't like Southern Baptist haven't been able to find it. So it seems to be that there was not much of a there.
That's just... it's very disheartening. And what does that say for the convention meeting in June?
Well, we need to be very judicious about how we spend our money. These are missions dollars, and we need to learn from these mistakes and try and move forward and build forward in a better way. But it's very, very costly. This is a significant setback for our mission work.
Well, that's for sure. Well, we're talking to Scott Coulter, my friend Scott Coulter, the president and founder of Danbury Institute. And Scott, if you can hang on past the break, there are a few more questions I want to talk to you about. Would that work for you?
Sure.
Okay, very good. Well, you are listening to Real Truth for Today, Pastor Jeff Shreve here, and we're looking at the scripture, 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 13. But evil men and imposters will proceed from bad to worse, deceiving and being deceived. We'll be right back.
This is Real Truth for Today. Podcasts of the program are available on the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back to the program. Pastor Jeff here talking to my good friend Scott Coulter, the founder and president of the Danbury Institute. We've been talking about what's going on in the Southern Baptist Convention, the news that came out yesterday that the Department of Justice has concluded their investigation. They found that there was no crisis, that there was no cover-up of sexual abuse, as every Southern Baptist that I know, every pastor, every messenger, we would condemn any kind of sexual abuse. We would say that is horrible. Has that happened in the history of the Southern Baptist Convention? Yes. And those men have been exposed and they've been prosecuted, criminally turned over to law enforcement. As Tom Askell has said, you know, we deal with issues in the church that are spiritual issues and emotional issues and things like that. But if they're crimes, we turn those over to law enforcement. We're not the crime police as far as that goes. We turn that over to the police. And Scott, that seems to be, pretty simplistic thinking, and it seems to be rooted in common sense.
Well, we've been saying that from the beginning here, Pastor Jeff, and I don't understand actually why that hasn't caught more traction with this abuse narrative and these systemic abuse advocates. Yes, as pastors and as leaders, we're equipped to deal with sin in the church and to talk about things that are sinful and help people with their spiritual condition, but we're not equipped, nor are we tasked with handling things that are criminal in nature. And sometimes things that are sinful overlap with being criminal, and so both areas that have jurisdiction in that department need to be involved. And so if someone comes to a pastor and is dealing with infidelity, that's a sin issue, and we address that biblically and spiritually, but it's likely not a crime. If someone comes and confesses that they've robbed a bank, well, that's certainly a sin issue. We address that spiritually, but it's also a crime, and you need to call the authorities in those moments and say there's someone who's committed a criminal act here and needs to be reported. The Lord of the universe has built churches to stay in a specific lane and to do specific things, and has built the government to be the civil magistrate and to bear the sword and to deal with criminal actions. And so as pastors, we must call the police. We have to do that immediately, even with an allegation of sexual abuse as a mandatory reporter. In most states, that's a required thing to do, and to hand it over to those who have law enforcement capabilities, imprisonment capabilities, trial capabilities, who know the law and can follow those things with the judicial system. We have none of those resources at our disposal, so it's really a farce to think that pastors and a denomination has the equipment and the ability to handle this in any way that would be proper. That's just totally untrue.
Well, it seems, Scott, as the messengers meet in Dallas in June, that this is going to be a big bone of contention. And as I think it's fair to say, hey, our leadership really failed in this, in believing lies, in kind of steering the messengers in a particular direction. And I think some were deceived. Evil men and imposters will go from bad to worse, deceiving and being deceived. Some were believing these things to be true because they were told by folks that they thought were credible and said, okay, well, this must be true. And so they're deceived. But then you have deceivers. You have people that know this is not true, and yet they want it to be true. I don't know. We talked about Russell Moore. Did he want this to be the case, or was he just stirring up trouble?
Well, like you said, it's impossible to know motive. and the Lord alone can judge that. But it seems to be that this was a, as Trump would say, to put it in kind of Trumpian terms right now, kind of a witch hunt, kind of looking for, going looking for a crime that would have been helpful to him, helpful to his political purposes. If we're being cynical, you know, there's been men trying to lead the Southern Baptist denomination a less conservative way, and to be able to discredit and to smear a bunch of conservative leaders as sexual criminals, that would be very useful in that political movement. Now, if those things were all found to be true and were found to be with evidence there, then certainly swift action would need to be taken. But after several years of living with this narrative very publicly, none of that's been found. And so it's hard to not ascribe some motive there, or to not at least see some intentionality in what he was doing, including releasing letters and that were private and had been written with somebody's purposes in mind, it seems, to leaking recordings from meetings that he had given his word were not being taken. And things like that that seem to smell like a lot of Washington, D.C. politics in a Southern Baptist denomination. It's hard to not see at least some intentionality to that. And then his withdrawal from the SBC and moving really into a different denomination with faith and practice there seem now telling that this really was not his commitment all along to uphold ethics within the SBC.
Now, it seems too, Scott, I know Beth Moore was very involved in this, and she seemed to jump on the bandwagon wagon thinking this was probably the case too. I would say she was probably more deceived than deceiving, but she swayed a lot of people in on social media and other things. She seemed to really partner with Russell Moore in his allegations.
I believe that's true, and it's probably impossible to unwind the ball of yarn of who was mostly deceived and who was mostly a deceiver in this. It becomes so caught up and intertwined together. But Beth Moore has also moved in her theological convictions. We've seen her become defensive of female pastors and of a more progressive view. And she's actually left the SBC and is now a practicing Anglican minister in some ways. I've seen her in the vestments and performing the Anglican rituals. And so she seems to also have moved into a denomination that is notably less conservative, a progressive, moderate, I guess at best you could describe it, mainstream denomination. And so her movement seems to also parallel this movement away from conservative principles. And as you correctly mentioned, it's those types of things that led us to found the Conservative Baptist Network, just to kind of be a bastion for what Baptists have historically and traditionally been, a conservative stronghold theologically and culturally in America. And that's taken a beating. That position has taken a beating in the last few years, but that seems to be a biblical position, and one that's receiving some vindication, at least in these moments and reports coming out now.
Well, Scott, you worked for Dr. Paige Patterson at Southwestern Seminary when all this stuff was blowing up. He seemed to be the target of that Me Too, we're going against him, and he's, you know, they were digging stuff up in sermons that he said that maybe it wasn't said, you know, the best that it should have been said, but, you know, they were attaching evil, nefarious motives to Dr. Patterson, and, you know, with all that has happened to him, and he is a dear friend, and I know somebody you look up to, I look up to, he really took the brunt of what was taking place in the Southern Baptist Convention just a few years ago.
That's correct. And Dr. Patterson, for your listeners here who might not be familiar, led what was called the Conservative Resurgence, recognizing that there was a leftward drift in the denomination once before. You know, they make the joke that if you put a boat in a river, it will only go downstream, that culture carries things leftward. And unless you work intentionally, that's the direction they naturally head. And so in the 60s and 70s, our denomination was going leftward previously and denying the inerrancy of Scripture, saying that parts of the Bible were true and inspired and parts were probably filled with errors. And we were the arbiters of figuring out which part was true that you needed to follow and which part you could ignore effectively. Dr. Patterson was one of the key architects that led the conservative resurgence to move our denomination back to its home, back to a conservative position where we believe the Bible is fully inerrant, fully inspired, without any mixture of error. And so he paid a great price for that then, but he has always been kind of the poster child of the conservative movement within the SBC. And of course, now to the group that's trying to once again move this left, he was an initial early target and fell victim really to a lot of the Me Too and cancel culture, I believe, before we even understood what that was. Mm-hmm. Another such person is Richard Land, the former leader of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission before Russell Moore. He was probably also a very early victim of some of this cancel culture mentality. Before we even really had our grasp around what was happening in our culture, this progressive shift was targeting conservative leaders, and a couple of these certainly fell early on. And it's taken now several years to see the ramifications of that, but also to kind of come full circle in recognizing there's not a lot of evidence to these claims.
Right, for sure. But it's taken its toll on Dr. Patterson. Hats off to that guy for standing tall, even in the midst of all those false allegations against him. And I think he's still going through a lawsuit, isn't he, that still hasn't been settled?
That's correct. Yes, sir.
Just insane. Well, let me shift gears on you a little bit, Scott. I know you live in the Dallas area, and this was sent to me today on DallasNews.com. Former Gateway pastor charged. It says indictment involves alleged sexual abuse of a child in the 1980s in Oklahoma. Now, Robert Morris was the founder of Gateway Church, gigantic church there in the Dallas area, and he's been indicted on 5 counts of lewd or indecent acts to a child. The Oklahoma Attorney General's office said Wednesday. That seems to be a pretty slam dunk case, since he's admitted to this with Cindy Clemenshire. From the time from the ages of 12 to 17, he sexually abused her in the 1980s. And they had initially said that there was the statute of limitations had run out on that, but evidently they have they've said no to that. Morris is 63. He was ousted last summer as this became public. Now, Scott, this would be an issue of cover-up, would it not?
This is certainly close to home here in Dallas, yes, and Gateway Church is a massive church in the DFW Metroplex here. I don't understand all the details of this case. I haven't been intricately involved in it, but the portion I do understand, I believe he had previously referenced an inappropriate relationship with a young woman, and that was others were led to believe that that was an affair or an inappropriate type of relationship, but with a woman, and that he had repented of that. And so that would fall, Pastor Jeff, into this category of something that was certainly sinful. But my understanding was those who heard his report of it did not believe it was a crime, at least at the time. And she has now come forward publicly and has gotten the authorities involved. And people have learned that she was an underage minor at the time. And so that would move it, of course, from being a sinful act into a criminal act, a sexual criminal act against the child. And that has brought the authorities involved in Oklahoma and now have found the path to bring charges against him. And, of course, I'm supportive of that. If he committed these horrible acts against the child, he absolutely should be held accountable and tried before a jury of his peers and likely convicted if guilty, and to pay the consequences for those actions. This goes back to this initial narrative. None of us that I'm aware are for or pro covering up or hiding sexual abuse. We want this to be dealt with wherever it is found, and this is perhaps one of those instances where it has been, but we are not equipped to do so. The Oklahoma authorities are getting involved and are doing so and have the authority and the capacity to do this well and effectively, and this has really sent this church into a tailspin here. The numbers have declined. The budget has significantly declined. It's a good reminder that our sin doesn't just hurt ourselves. It hurts thousands of other people in this case.
Yeah, it's a horrible thing. And, if he was deceiving people as to, you know, that wasn't his lead foot. Hey, I was sexually abusing a 12-year-old. It was a young woman. Obviously, his wife knew what the situation was, because family friends, or these were family friends. He stayed at this man's house when he would be in the area, and it's just horrific. I know it was a long time ago, but Scott, there are things that we do can do. Nobody's immune, but that disqualify you from ministry and disqualify you from being free because you commit a crime that requires incarceration, and it seems to me like that's what he did. And so I know Cindy Clemenshire, as she has stated, she probably feels a certain level of vindication with this, as she's been dealing with this for a long time. Let me ask you this question, Scott. As you were, you've been a professor on a seminary campus and you know about campus life. We're hearing in the news about Mahmoud Khalil of Columbia University and how the Trump administration is revoking his green card. He's a resident alien and pro-Hamas and, you know, inciting violent protests on the campus of Columbia University. Well, true to form, those on the left are supporting his right to free speech because that's what we have in America. And Marco Rubio and Donald Trump have said, hey, you don't have a right to come over here and then start to, you know, take over a campus and endanger and put fear in the hearts of Jewish students and you know, push pro-Hamas agenda. What is your take on what's happening there with Mahmoud Khalil?
Well, there are several different angles to this. First of all, as an illegal alien in the country, he doesn't necessarily bear the same rights the American citizens bear, specifically through free speech. That's a right endowed, certainly in some ways, by our Creator, but specifically through the Constitution to Americans in this sense. And he hails from a country that does not have free speech practices in the same way that we do, probably what led him to America. Also, the longstanding kind of quip about this is that your rights extend so far as they infringe upon someone else's. And it seems clear that his expression of that and his protest have infringed upon others' rights, even to be able to assemble and to obtain their education in a safe environment. And so I support President Trump, certainly not squashing the First Amendment or any of those things, which they're not doing, but in getting our universities back under control. Universities have been a hotbed for leftism and for really a lot of the problems in our country have boiled and festered in our universities. He's rooting a bunch of that out. And also, it's been a place that has been very concerning about anti-Semitism. And we've seen that for a long time now, growing on university campuses. And to the point where Jewish students are afraid to attend colleges and places, afraid to go to their classes, afraid to even exist there on campus in dormitories and in buildings for fear of being harmed and physically and emotionally, spiritually, all those things. And so I support steps now to at least level the playing field and to allow people of every group, but especially our friends and our allies from Israel to have a safe place to exist and to be part of what's happening here. So absolutely.
All right, Scott Coulter, thank you for being my guest today. You're listening to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. We'll be taking your calls after the break. Don't go away. If we learned anything from this election, it's how important it is for us to fight, fight, fight. We also learned how desperately the left wants to fight to take babies' lives, which is why every day Preborn Ministries fights for the babies. Preborn's network of clinics are positioned in the highest abortion areas, fighting for mothers deciding between the life or the death of their child. Preborn welcomes these women with God's love and offers them a free ultrasound to introduce their precious baby and hear the beautiful heartbeat. This amazing encounter gives her baby a fighting chance, and the majority of the time, the mother will choose life. Would you join Preborn in the fight for life? One ultrasound is just $28, and $140 will sponsor 5 ultrasounds. Babies are worth fighting for. To donate, dial #250 on your cell and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR. All gifts are tax deductible, and Preborn has a 4-star charity rating. Fight, fight, fight for the babies.
If you'd like to contact Pastor Jeff, email pastorjeff@fromhisheart.org. Now, back to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back to the program. Pastor Jeff here. As we typically do on Real Truth for Today, that we save the last segment for your calls and questions and comments, so you can call at 888-589-8840. 888-589-8840. That's 888-589-8840. I'd love to hear from you. I do want to let you hear from Marco Rubio. Marco Rubio was asked about this situation with Mahmoud Khalil. And, you know, the left takes the opposite side of really any issue. If Donald Trump is for it, they're going to be against it. If he's for drinking water, they would be saying, yeah, it's bad to drink water, because they hate him so much. And as we've talked before on the program, the Trump derangement syndrome and now the Musk derangement syndrome, you lose all rationality when you have when you just hate this guy so much that you would rather everything fail than that guy to succeed. And so when it comes to the situation of Mahmoud Khalil and stirring up trouble on the campus at Columbia University, and the Trump administration say, hey, you're out. They've tried to block that. And I saw Senator Schumer, you know, whining and crying, this is terrible. We have free speech. We're going to fight this. You're an authoritarian dictator. You can't do this. Well, this is Marco Rubio talking about that situation, and he says what he says. It's rational. It's common sense. Everybody should agree, in my opinion, although they don't. Well, here's his view.
President Trump appealed to a lot of Americans during his campaign on free speech arguments and not suppressing speech, especially from the government. But your revocation of the green card, to many, is seen as one of the most anti-speech actions a secretary can take with his powers. How do you respond?
Yeah, when you enter this is an important point, and I'm glad you asked this question. When you come to the United States as a visitor, which is what a visa is, which is how this individual entered this country, on a visitor's visa, okay, you are here as a visitor. We can deny you that visa. We can deny you that if you tell us when you apply, hi, I'm trying to get into the United States on a student visa. I am a big supporter of Hamas, a murderous, barbaric group that kidnaps children, that rapes teenage girls, that takes hostages, that allows them to die in captivity, that returns more bodies than live hostages. If you tell us that you are in favor of a group like this, and if you tell us when you apply for your visa, and by the way, I intend to come to your country as a student, and rile up all kinds of anti-Jewish student, anti-Semitic activities. I intend to shut down your universities. If you told us all these things when you applied for a visa, we would deny your visa. I hope we would. If you actually end up doing that, once you're in this country on such a visa, we will revoke it. And if you end up having a green card, not citizenship, but a green card as a result of that visa while you're here in those activities, we're going to kick you out. It's as simple as that. This is not about free speech. This is about people that don't have a right to be in the United States to begin with. No one has a right to a student visa. No one has a right to a green card, by the way. So when you apply for a student visa or any visa to enter the United States, we have a right to deny you for virtually any reason. But I think being a supporter of Hamas and coming into our universities and turning them upside down and being complicit in what are clearly crimes of vandalization, complicit in shutting down learning institutions. There are kids at these schools that can't go to class. You pay all this money to these high-priced schools that are supposed to be of great esteem, and you can't even go to class. You're afraid to go to class because these lunatics are running around with covers on their face, screaming terrifying things. If you told us that's what you intended to do when you came to America, we would have never let you in. And if you do it once you get in, we're going to revoke it and kick you out.
Well, that was Marco Rubio talking about what is going on with Mahmoud Khalil. And I think that everybody that would look at the situation would say, yeah, we don't want you coming into our country stirring up violence and hatred of Jews. And if you're pro-Hamas is an evil organization that needs to be eradicated from the face of the earth. They rape, they murder, they pillage, they do so many unspeakable things that to be supportive of that under the guise of free speech is just ridiculous. And so, you know, Trump has talked about, I saw this yesterday, I think it was on CNN or MSNBC, one of those, but they were saying that Trump is against, he's going to prosecute those who protest. Well, he specifically said if you violently protest, as people are violently protesting against Tesla and Elon Musk, and they're setting Tesla trucks, Cybertrucks on fire in Seattle. They're torching and destroying the charging stations for Tesla. They're attacking Tesla dealerships, throwing rocks through the window and things like that. If you do that kind of stuff, that you are, he's going to go after you as a terrorist organization because it's a coordinated effort to go after Tesla and to go after, and why do they want to do that? Do they just hate Tesla? No, they hate Elon Musk. And they hate Elon Musk because he's heading up Doge. And they hate Doge because Doge is exposing all the corruption and the abuse and the waste in our government and running an audit on all the government entities and the NGOs and all those things. And it's doing what we want it to do. It's doing what the 77 million that voted for Donald Trump wanted to see happen. We want to see waste, fraud, corruption, and abuse exposed and eradicated from our government. We want to see those, as we've been talking today, evil men and imposters will proceed from bad to worse, deceiving and being deceived. We want to see the evil men and the imposters. We want to see them called onto the carpet and prosecuted for their crimes. And as I said earlier, you know, you can good-heartedly get caught up in a lie and believe a lie because you trust this person that's telling you these things that happen to be not true. And so many are deceived, but there are those who are deceivers. And I think when it comes to a deceiver starts to deceive himself. He starts to believe his own baloney. And, you know, you see these guys, Debbie and I have been watching these shows about startups, these big tech startups. And, you know, with the program that we have called VidAngel, you can download VidAngel and you can watch things on VidAngel and you can cut out all the terrible vulgarities and the cursing and the blasphemies that are in so many of these programs, and you can watch it for the heart of what is being said. And so we watched a docudrama on Uber and the Uber's CEO, Travis Kalanick, and how they do things. And, you know, they are just such drivers and these entrepreneur deluxe, and they have some great skills and talents and abilities. I mean, Elon Musk is one of those guys. But then you have these other guys. We're watching something about the company WeWork, and we watched a documentary on WeWork, and the head of WeWork, I'm trying to remember his name, Adam Newman or something like that. Anyway, he's selling a pig in a poke, and he's, you know, hey, he was basically leasing space out. So he'd lease the space in a big building and in big cities, and then he'd sublease the space. That was his business, but he called it WeWork, and it's like a big cult, and he's selling a pig in a poke. He's selling a bag of nothing. And WeWork, the docudrama is called We Crashed, because he crashed it and cost a lot of people a lot of money with his deception. But I think he started to believe his own baloney. And I think that's true with a lot of people. And you have good people getting caught up in the lies. And the devil is behind it all, as we've talked before. He is a liar, Jesus said, and the father of lies. Whenever he speaks a lie. That's his nature, to lie, and he's a convincing liar. And it's very important for us to immerse ourselves in the truth. What is the truth? It's the Word of God. And so, as it says in Hebrews chapter 5, verse 14, but solid food is for the mature, who because of practice have their senses trained to discern good and evil. We have said on this program, I think it was my friend Rick who came on, and Rick Scarborough, and said, you know, with what's going on in our government, it is incumbent upon all of us to do our research, to judge with righteous judgment. Don't judge according to appearance, but judge with righteous judgment, as Jesus said, and to make sure that we're discerning. We're not just believing everything we're hearing, but we're discerning. And as I shared yesterday, when you do a study, you ask AI about the negative reporting that's coming from CBS, ABC, NBC, CNN, MSNBC, all those liberal outlets. It's 90 to 95% negative on Donald Trump. Whatever he does, they're going to choose the opposite side. And as Bill Maher pointed out, hey, eventually you start looking like an idiot because you're against keeping biological males out of female sports, and you're against, a pro-Hamas person agitating on college campuses. You're against deporting him. Oh, that's terrible. That's awful. We shouldn't do that. Of course we should do that. I mean, if you hate America, as Bill Maher said before in Dearborn, Michigan, they were saying death to America in America. Well, that should alarm everybody. And we don't support that. You shouldn't support that. Hey, if you hate the team, then go to another team. If you hate the country, then leave the country. Rosie O'Donnell did that. She went to Ireland. And as Donald Trump said, I feel sorry for Ireland. Tongue in cheek there. But go somewhere else. Nobody's forcing you to stay here. So go where you would, you could be happy. And what you're going to find is you're unhappy because everywhere you go, you're there. And the unhappiness resides with you. Well, we're going to the phone lines, and we have Dawn on the line from Mississippi. Dawn, welcome to Real Truth for Today.
Thank you. What I would like to see was Donald Trump do an executive order on any protesters, whether they're legal or illegal protests, that only U.S. citizens can protest. And if you're found to be a non-citizen, that you're deported at your own expense, you lose whatever bank accounts or property you have in this country. Also, if you're a dual citizenship and you're out there protesting, you lose your U.S. citizenship, and you are deported at your own expense to the country, your other citizenship country. You lose your property and your bank accounts and everything that's in this country.
Well, that would stop a lot of that. I think we need to put teeth into those crimes, Dawn. And so I'm with you. You know, you can change the behavior of folks if you just up the ante. You know, if we said if you get caught speeding, it's an automatic $25,000 fine and a month in jail, people would be watching their speed very, very closely. Because all of a sudden, you know, it'd be like, whoa, I can't, the cost of breaking this law is too high. And so you can control outward behavior anyway. You can't control inward behavior, but you can control outward behavior if you just up the ante on those things. And if we had that kind of stuff with those violent protests, you know, we have the right to peacefully protest. We don't have the right to violently protest. And as they called the protests from a few years ago, the mostly peaceful protests, are burning things down in the background. I mean, it's just such a joke. And that's what has become of those left-leaning media outlets, CNN, MSNBC, ABC, NBC, CBS, all those that have gone to the left. And people don't trust them anymore because they're not reporting the news. They're spinning the news, as Bill O'Reilly had for so many years, the no spin zone. We're going to just tell you this is what happened, and we're not going to try and spin it one way or the other. And so, you know, at American Family Radio, American Family Association, we want to tell you the truth. And we don't want to spin things and, you know, this side is good and that side is always evil. No, we want to call things like an umpire would. You know, you call it fairly, strikes and balls. And, when something is fair, you say call it fair. If it's foul, you call it foul. But we do need to return America to a place of law and order, a place where Lady Justice does have on a blindfold. We can't have two-tiered justice system. And we need to make things safe again in America. And rhetoric that would incite people to violence and would foment these feelings of anti-Semitism, well, that has no place in America. So I appreciate the comments, Dawn. Thanks for listening to Real Truth for Today. Well, we are out of time, and it's been a joy to be with you as we've been talking about 2 Timothy 3:13, but evil men and imposters will go from bad to worse, deceiving and being deceived. You and I need to immerse ourselves in the truth of the Word of God. We need to be so firm on what is true north so that when the devil comes at us with his lies, and he will because he's a liar and the father of lies, that we're able to detect this is a lie and then we can steer clear from it. So go out today, shine for Christ, and share what great things the Lord has done for you, and know that God will use you as his witness. God bless you.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.